Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, it's All-Star Weekend in Toronto. We've got all the skills competition roundup for you.
Trade season's here already with Elias Lindholm and Sean Monahan already off the board.
And the NHL intends to go to not one, but the next two Olympics. All that coverage and more.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
I'm Michael Trikos, and this is the Hockey News pregame show brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. What's up, hockey fans? Welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. Michael Trikos with me, as always, is Ryan Kennedy. And Ryan, it's All-Star Weekend in Toronto.
Indeed.
And it's not just All-Star Weekend, it's also trade weekend, I guess?
It feels like it, yeah. It's early trade deadline season.
Well, let's get started. The big trade, the big news was it happened before the All-Star Skills Competition. Calgary sending Elias Lindholm to the Vancouver Canucks. This is one that we kind of all expected. Another Swede goes over to Vancouver, another center. I love this move for the Vancouver Canucks, even before we talk about how costly it was for the Canucks to get Lindholm. But, you know, in Lindholm, you're getting another top six forward, a guy that can take some pressure off Elias Pettersson, one of the better two-way centers in the NHL. What did you make of this?
Yeah, a great fit for Vancouver. And actually, you know, speaking of All-Star Weekend, Rick Tocchet, the coach of the Canucks, is here as well as one of the All-Star coaches.
Lindholm is here as well.
Lindholm was here. He was going to be here for Calgary. Now he's here for Vancouver.
Yeah.
But Tocchet, you know, we asked him about the acquisition, and he was saying it gives them so much flexibility in that top six because, you know, he doesn't know what they're going to do yet, but you could go Lindholm and Pettersson on the same line, and they could trade off faceoffs. They could have their stronger sides depending on which side of the dot you're on. We've seen a couple of teams do that over the years now where, you know, you might have two centers on a line. And, I mean, faceoffs are so important for
possession. Sam Reinhart does that with Barkov at times.
Well, there you go. Yep. And I know Toronto did that. I think it was Matthews and Nylander back in the day when they were younger.
Yep.
So, you know, and they, of course, Vancouver's JT Miller as well. So they have a really good sort of nexus of top six centers. They have more than you technically need, but that's a great problem to have because Tocchet was also saying when you have the center coming down low, you know, when you're trying to break the puck out, having two centers is better than having one center. And you know, sometimes it's going to have to be a winger going back for the puck. Mm-hmm. Much better to have a center doing it because they're more acclimated to it. So having two natural centers on one line, just in terms of defense and transition to offense, is an advantage as well. So just even strategically, this is great for the Canucks, on top of the fact that, as you mentioned, Lindholm is a fantastic two-way player in his own right.
Yeah. You know, I talked to Lindholm on Thursday after the trade obviously happened, and I talked to Pettersson, and both of them are just ecstatic. Like, from Pettersson's standpoint, he said this is just an amazing show of faith from management. You know, nice reward for Vancouver players.
Right.
You know, you're leading the division, despite what the underlying numbers might suggest. And, you know, you didn't wait to the trade deadline to get this guy. You didn't wait till kind of you're starting to slump and maybe Edmonton is past Vancouver in the standings. You're getting a Lindholm right when Canucks are cooking, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing that it's almost a trend we've seen in recent years where if you're going to make a big splash and you're going to toss out some very nice assets that we'll talk about in a second, you want to get as much runway with that player as possible because he's going to have to learn your system, your structure. He's going to have to develop chemistry with your top players. You know, I mean, who knows? Maybe Lindholm and Miller work better together in the end. It's good to figure that out now versus a few weeks from now.
Yeah,
so the longer
the
better.
Yeah. I love that. Another big, oh, let's talk about the
return.
The, yeah, the pieces that had to go the other way. And whether you think, you know, did Calgary really make out well with that?
I think Calgary did very well. You get a first round pick, which is obviously the gold standard of any, you know, deadline or pre-deadline trade. You know, Kuzmenko is kind of interesting because we've seen him be a very good goal scorer.
Yep.
And I think Calgary could certainly use that. Now, is he going to play any defense for you? Probably not. and you look at that Calgary lineup now with Lindholm subtracted, it's like how many top-end forwards can actually play defense in Calgary? You know, Nazem Kadri's a great two-way guy.
Kadri for sure.
Yeah, but
Huberto, maybe not.
Yeah, they might have too many guys that are...
Mangiapane. Yeah.
You know, they've got offense for sure, but
definitely.
Do they have two-way? It's hard to say. Now, at the moment, they still have great defense. But who knows what will happen in the future at the deadline with Calgary, because we know a lot of teams are interested in Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin, guys like that. Obviously, the big name, Hunter Brustevich, for me at least, he's been one of the top scorers in the OHL this year, and he's a defenseman. So it's not that he's leading defensemen in scoring, it's that he's up at the top with everybody. And, you know, this is a player whose defense has come along. He's a pretty sturdy kid. So a very interesting option as an offensive defenseman that is, you know, not lost in his own zone. And then Yoni Yermo, another prospect, towering guy at 6'5". So yeah, I think Calgary and Craig Conroy, nice little deal for them.
Yeah, it's always tough when you're trading within the division, but to get a guy like Brustevich, personally, I would have loved to have seen him on a power play with Quinn Hughes. But now he's going to probably be quarterbacking a future power play in Calgary. Another Canadian team that made a huge splash, or maybe we'll determine if it was a huge splash.
Sure.
Winnipeg Jets getting Sean Monahan from the Montreal Canadiens. And off the start, Montreal had to take on Monahan. They got a first-round pick when they actually took on Monahan. Now you trade Monahan, they get another first-round pick.
Right.
That is the definition of asset management. Sorry, I can't even like pronounce it because I'm just flabbergasted at how well the Canadiens did here.
Yeah, and I mean, Sean Monahan, when healthy, was a very effective player for the Habs. So, yeah, win all around for Montreal in that respect. But from Winnipeg's perspective, you know, again, a team that needed to be rewarded by their GM, right? Because the Jets have been so good this year. And they've had some injury problems, you know, Mark Scheifele obviously being a prominent one. And, you know, you look at their depth chart before this trade, and they had Namestnikov at number one, which is not, like, ideal. And obviously that's not the plan. When Scheifele comes back, he's the number one.
Sure.
But now you have a guy in Sean Monahan who can really be one of those middle six centers and give you that great depth where, you know, I'd prefer to see an Adam Lowry on like a fourth line.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and totally. You know they've got a guy like Gabe Vilardi, who, you know, if you go Scheifele, Vilardi, and then Monahan, Lowry, I mean that's a pretty like nasty crew in a playoff series. You got a lot of skill, a lot of size there, guys with you know different versatility. So for the Jets, it's like yeah, okay, a first rounder, that's pretty heavy, and there's a conditional pick that Montreal will get in like 2027 if the Jets win the Stanley Cup. So who knows what's going to happen there. But, you know, I look at Winnipeg right now and Cole Perfetti is still very young. Mm-hmm. He's only going to get better and he's already pretty good. You've got Brad Lambert in the system. You've got Rutger McGroarty in the system. So they have forwards coming up. I always like to have a first rounder, but if I'm looking at Winnipeg right now, I'm saying, okay, well, the future is now for them. So I don't mind them giving up a first rounder because they've drafted pretty well over the years.
Yeah, I was talking to Connor Hellebuck before the trade happened, and I was talking about him about like championship windows and you know how Winnipeg has really kind of propped it back up after it looked like it was closing. And I said, well, you know, where are you guys in your kind of development evolution? And he's like, we're winning a Stanley Cup. That's where our sights are set. So getting a Monahan, I think you lose Pierre-Luc Dubois, you lose some size in that trade for Gabe Vilardi. You lost some size in Blake Wheeler as well.
But Vilardi's pretty big himself.
Yeah.
Not a bruiser per se.
No. Hey, compared to a Monahan or a Dubois, I still think those guys are a little bit bigger. And, you know, the thing I like about Monahan is you know, he's played for Calgary. He's played in that sort of that Western Conference style. At his best, And I think that's the hope, is that Winnipeg gets the Monahan that, you know, we've seen lately in Montreal and that we used to see in Calgary at his best. So I think this could be a sneaky good trade.
I agree. Yeah, I think Winnipeg did really well here. And again, it's the sort of reward where it's like we want as many weapons as possible, because if you're going to head into the playoffs, you never know what's going to happen. It's always a war of attrition with injuries. It's good to have a guy like Monahan who can step up and be a second-line center. He could even fill in as a number one center if you really needed him to. And it has been a busy All-Star weekend. The Los Angeles Kings dismissed longtime head coach Todd McClellan. The Kings have been down in the worst way recently, really fallen down standings.
Yep.
So was this the right move? Was this a justified move in your mind?
It was kind of an inevitable move. Mm. We were all just kind of waiting for this to happen, whether it was going to be before the All-Star break, after the All-Star break. It turns out it was during the All-Star break.
Right.
Yeah, Cam Talbot is being overworked. The players are starting to point fingers at each other. So something has to give. I like this move in the sense that, you know, hearing the comments from Cam Talbot, and I had a chance to talk to him, he was saying that, like, you know, the players really kind of control that room, whether it's a Kopitar, whether it's a Doughty, a lot of veteran voices there. I almost get the feeling they need a guy to kind of kick them in the butt. I don't know if that's Jim Hiller, but, you know, certainly by all reports, Tom McClellan is a very player-friendly coach. Maybe they need a kind of a Sutter-type coach.
Ah, you go back and forth, because obviously they had Sutter when they were winning Stanley Cups. And Jim Hiller obviously stepping up as the interim. He was the assistant coach beforehand. And when they made the announcement, the Kings pointed out that Hiller will be the interim for the duration of this season. So obviously GM Rob Blake is not going to hurry things here.
Right.
One name that I'm kind of curious about, and I hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, getting more of a fiery guy, but I feel like with Los Angeles right now, they're in an interesting place where you still have those veteran holdovers from the Cup years, your Kopitars and your Doughtys.
Right.
But then you have those younger players coming up, like a Quentin Byfield and, you know, a Brant Clark, who is still not even a regular, really, with the Kings. But you have this sort of combination of generations. So I don't think it's the sort of team that needs to have a recycled coach necessarily. I think they have a bit more freedom there because they were going from a veteran in Todd McClellan. I think they have, you know, more options there. One name I would like to see is Marco Sturm. Now, Marco Sturm is already in the organization. He coaches the Ontario Reign of the AHL. He also coached Germany to a silver medal at the Olympics back in 2018. This was not a Leon Draisaitl Germany team. This was not a Moritz Seider in his prime Germany team. This was like a very workmanlike, like Marcel Gotch was like a big name on that team. And Marco Sturm got them together playing as a team. There was, and I remember they had a shot against the Russians in that gold medal game.
I remember that game.
Didn't work out, but they were there. So I would like to see Marco Sturm get his shot in LA. I think that'd be pretty interesting.
You know what I also would like to see? A trade. I keep hearing about Pierre-Luc Dubois. They're not happy with him. Doesn't seem like he's happy there.
Right.
You know, this is All-Star weekend. It might as well be, you know, trade deadline weekend.
Sure.
The way that the moves are making. So, yeah, I wonder if the Kings have a trade kind of up their sleeve to kind of also maybe
shake things up.
Yeah, send a jolt through the lineup.
Interesting, interesting. Well, a big jolt that we got the other day, the NHL and the NHLPA and the IIHF, for that matter, announcing that NHLs will indeed play at not only the next Olympics in Italy in 2026, but also 2030, which I believe is going to be in France. So let's talk Olympics, because we've been waiting for this for years now.
Right.
How excited are you that the NHLers are going back to the games?
Forget about if I'm excited. The NHL players are excited.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing. And also announced was a Four Nations tournament, which we had already caught wind of.
For 2025.
For 2025, World Cup kind of style, featuring U.S., Canada, Sweden, Finland, which is great. I think we needed another kind of World Cup. But, you know, more importantly, when you talk to, you know, the McDavids, the Crosbys, the Matthews, they want to go to an Olympics.
Yes.
McDavid wants to play with Crosby. Matthews wants to be part of that Team USA. You got to remember, these guys never got a chance to play at the Olympics. The last time they were held was, what, 2014? Are we going back that far?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions as to what the roster is going to look like, because, you know, in a couple years from now, Sidney Crosby, who was the captain of the last Team Canada, he's going to be approaching 36 years old at that time.
Yeah, and you know what? I think Crosby will be there.
I think he's there in the next one.
Yeah, I think he's 2026 for sure. 2030, hard to say, because, and you have to keep in mind, Crosby has been in the NHL since he was a teenager, and he's had some hard miles, and he's had some long cup runs as well. I mean, that's the only downside of being a multi-Stanley Cup champion is that you've had some short summers. And granted, it hasn't been like that recently, but 2026 for sure. And I'm even thinking, like, you know, you start putting together the lines in your head, and I'm not sure where Crosby fits in, you know, in a year and a half, which is sort of what we're looking at here, or I guess it's 2 years really, because it'll probably be February 2026.
It'll probably be mid-season. Yeah,
but is your top line, because Canada always has too many centers, right, is it a McDavid, Bedard, MacKinnon?
Ooh.
Do you spread the love a little more, where you've got like Marner in there, and then obviously you got Crosby as well? Like, you have so many centers that can play different roles. Mm-hmm. Is Crosby a shutdown guy? Because he's a bit older, he's not.
He
maybe,
very well could be your, you know, Patrice Bergeron, right?
Right.
So,
do you do like a line where it's like Crosby, and you know he's played with Marchand internationally before with a lot of success? Is there a third guy that you put on that line? One name that's already out there that I'm kind of intrigued by, I think Adam Fantilli would probably make it. Even if he's the 13th forward, I think him and Bedard should probably be on that 2026 team.
Yeah, the other question I have is, who captains the team? Like, do you still have Sid as the de facto captain? Or, as
I think
we're
it's
seeing
be
now, is it McDavid's team?
Yeah, I think Crosby gets an A, but I think it's got to be McDavid as the C.
I agree. I think this is his time to shine. You know, I feel sorry for these guys. Like, I remember talking to Mark Scheifele years ago, him saying, you know, like, I might never, ever get to play in an Olympics. And it's kind of looking that way now. Because
yeah,
2 years from now, I don't think Mark Scheifele is going to be on this team.
Maybe not.
Brad Marchand has never even played in an Olympics, if you can believe it.
Wow, that's a good point. He had the World Cup.
And he probably was not going to be there, because 2 years from now, he's a little older. Like, Crosby, yeah, we're saying, you know, even at the age of 36, where you've seen what he's doing now, he's top 25 in scoring.
Yeah.
He's going to be there. He's more than a point per game, but age 42, when 2030 comes around, what do you think he's going to
be? I think he might be management for 2030. Like, maybe he's the Wayne Gretzky Olympic manager, you know, that we saw back in the day. Maybe Crosby takes on that role in 2030. That, to me, would be intriguing.
Which is just wild when you think of, like, the management team could be an all-star cast of, like, maybe Drew Doughty's on that team as well.
Maybe.
Maybe Jason Spezza.
Sure, yeah.
So, a lot of kind of things to kind of ponder, and I think that's the greatest thing about having the Olympics in the, you know, in the future now, is we can start kind of putting together, where does Canada stack up against the U.S.?
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about, is Russia going to be there? I think we all kind of hope that things sort of start simmering down, and that, you know, you do have a Team Russia.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because, you know, obviously Canada might not even be the favorites when we're talking 2 years from now.
I was going to say, real quick, as we sort of wrap this segment up, Team USA, I think, has to be the favorite in 2026, because Canada's going to have some big questions in net.
Yes.
Is it Aiden Hill? Is it Jordan Binnington? There's not a lot of options for 2026, and not a lot coming down the pipeline. Whereas you look at Team USA, firepower, no problem. Auston Matthews, Jack Hughes, Quinn Hughes on the back end, Jack Eichel up front. The defense is going to be just ridiculous. Yeah. McAvoy.
Fox.
Slavin is your shutdown guy. Brock Faber should be there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? In net, Demko, Ottinger, Hellebuck, like three of the best goalies in the world. It's got to be Team USA's medal to lose, right?
I think so. The only weak spot usually, traditionally, has been down the middle. Mm-hmm. But now you just mentioned Matthews, Eichel. Jack Hughes.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good 1-2-3. I don't even know if Canada has a 1-2-3 that kind of rivals that. Probably do, but.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to be tight. So anyways, we're going to talk, I'm sure, a lot of Olympics before the games even come. It's a couple of years down the road, but.
We're joined in studio by Florida Panthers site editor and reporter David Dwork. David, let's talk about the skills competition on Friday night. I'm saying this is the greatest skills competition I've ever seen, and for the simple reason is, it was a skills competition. It wasn't like, you know, a stand-up comedy act. This wasn't open mic Tuesday.
Evening at the Improv.
Yeah, how did you guys find it?
Yeah, when I was walking out last night, the one kind of resonating thought was this was so much better than last year. Like last year, like I told you guys before, I think we'd still be sitting there watching it if it was going on. It just dragged on forever. They did a lot of good things this year. I love the old school stuff. Like when I think of the skills competition, like when I was a kid, it was, you know, Al McInnes in the hardest shot and Ray Bourque in the accuracy shooting. And that's like, excuse me, the purity of it is what I think of. And I think they kind of got back to that this year. I liked the one time with the targets. I thought that was a cool element of it. So I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, and it's sort of interesting too, because last year in Florida, I thought the segments that worked the best were the pre-taped ones where they could edit it down. Now, the way they presented it was a fail because they broke it up into sections. But, you know, I was at the surfboard one, and, you know, the finished
sounds
product.
Weird you saying the surfboard one.
It's true, yeah. Well, the dunk tank, right? The surfboard dunk tank. And then there was the golf one. And watching that, you know, from the arena, it's like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. But with this one, I agree, Mike. It felt like, you know, this is just, and it's kind of funny because you totally could have gone remote in Toronto, but they went for that pure skill, like, let's keep it on ice, let's keep it as tight as we can for an all-star skills competition. And we saw a lot of guys step up.
Well, you know, credit Connor McDavid, because he obviously stepped up, but he had a huge role in deciding what the skills events were going to be. And, you know, when I look at, like, Connor McDavid, he's the greatest player in the NHL right now. He might go down as one of the greatest of all time, probably will, in that group of three or whatever. You think skating, you think stick handling, you think, you know, the guy can put the puck wherever he wants. He's just, he's got skill just oozing out of him, and he showcased it in every single event that he was participating in last night. And I don't know how it was going to translate, because I've read on the sheet, it's like, obstacle course, they're going to have to go through these kind of pylons and all that. And I was like, oh man, this could get very lost, especially with the point system. But, you know, from just a pure spectator standpoint, I was like, this makes a lot of sense. Like, these are skills that you see in a game.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought was cool about the way that they played it out was kind of to your point. They kept it all on the ice. They got away from, like, what really dragged last year was, like, they're doing these cool breakaways. They're wearing costumes. We don't totally know what they're doing or they're saying. Like, oh, cool, there's lifeguards, or look, there's a guy with the cape. And especially, like, when you're watching in the building, if you don't know exactly what they're trying to pull off, it can get a little tough to sit through. Yeah. So I think, you know, whether it was McDavid that had the input and said, maybe we need to take a step back and go back to what works from an original standpoint, but it worked.
Yeah, and it's funny, we were talking beforehand, it didn't rely on their personalities so much, because, right, like, let's face it, hockey players tend to be kind of reserved. Like, it's not like, you know, the NBA slam dunk competition or something like that, where, you know, it plays to the athlete's strength. I think this sort of played to their strengths. But I will say, and I'll get your opinion on this as a Florida Panthers beat writer, we got a villain last night. Nikita Kucherov of the Tampa Bay Lightning didn't seem all that stoked to be participating, and he got the boos from the Toronto crowd, which obviously, you know, there's going to be a bit of animosity there anyways.
There's some history.
Some history between the Leafs and the Lightning, particularly in the playoffs, but just your thoughts on Kucherov wearing the black hat.
Man, you know, thinking about it now, like 12 hours later, I'm a little bit more okay and a little bit more, you know, yeah, you know, I kind of get it. But last night it was like, I'm thinking, like, there's guys that are out there, I don't know how hard that they want to win $1 million, but there's guys that were really busting their butts out there. And that, I think, is what you like as fans to see, when they're really cutting into their edges and they're stick handling. Like, watching Austin Matthews at the end go through the obstacle course was really cool. And then you got Kucherov, who's like, Dipsy, I missed it, or whatever. Like, you know, like, I get it. It's funny, and it's an interesting element to it, but was it a little insulting to the guys who were really trying? I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? If it seemed like he was just too cool for the event. Like, he's like, if I'm not going to win it, then I'm just like,
I'm not going to try.
So a guy that was trying was obviously McDavid, and let's just keep going back to him, because he dominated basically the entire competition. The thing it was weird is, like, you literally had the most skilled players out there, and you saw, like, how, like, Elias Pettersson was struggling. He falls down. Other guys were, like flubbing the puck and stuff. McDavid just, like, scooted through that thing like a video game character.
Yeah.
It really did kind of highlight that there is another level between, you know, the Petterssons and even, like, the McKinnons or the Kucherovs, and then a McDavid. Like, there is a gap there, and you don't have to be a hockey fan to understand or appreciate just how ridiculous this guy is.
Yeah, we get those generational guys like every so often. Like you think before McDavid, he's just Crosby and Ovechkin. And then, you know, before that we had the purity of the 90s with like Mario and all those guys. But
totally.
I mean, who is at McDavid's level? Like when you talk about just his skills, whether it's stick handling, shooting, vision, I mean, he's at a completely number level, another level. And you talk about like video game, imagine his skill level has got to be way higher.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see in maybe 2-3 years if Connor Bedard gets to that level of skill. Because if you think about his release and his hockey mind and just his hands in general, like he doesn't have that breakaway speed of McDavid. I mean, basically nobody does.
Yeah.
But Bedard, I could see him ruling a lot of those events in the near future.
Are you guys surprised that Cale Makar could shoot it that hard?
No.
No?
Defenseman.
He's not a big guy, guys.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, the way that players choose their sticks these days, I think they have a lot more intuition into what works the best for them.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that plays into it, where it's not everybody just using a big, heavy stick. Like, guys know, like, some, they like the really whippy sticks, which obviously wouldn't help with a slap shot. But I think they're very in tune with what's best for them.
Yeah,
true.
I always just think the defensemen, they're going to have had the heaviest shots on the ice. I don't know about you guys, but from a goalie standpoint, whenever I watch Hardest Shot and it's like they show the puck going, I'm like, yep, that would have hit the goalie right in the face.
right
in the face, every time.
Yeah. Now, David, I wanted to ask you, because All-Star Game was in Florida last year, and so we got to check out your market, but what's it like coming to Toronto from another NHL market for the All-Star Game? What's been your experience so far in the quote-unquote center of the hockey universe?
What I love is, like, well, first of all, everything's really centrally located, which is cool. You don't really have to rent a car or anything. And just getting all around downtown, all the different areas, wherever I go, there's hockey fans wearing a million different jerseys. I saw a lot of the custom All-Star jerseys, which I thought was really impressive considering the teams were just picked on Friday. And then Saturday morning, I'm seeing, like, the jerseys of the players and their special colors. So I think it's really cool. I think this is, you know, the hockey mecca. And aside from the temperature, which is quite a bit different than it was last year, I think it's been great. I love it up here.
Well, you're still lucky. It was warm. It's like been unseasonably
That's what I keep
warm.
Hearing. Like, you should have been here 2 weeks ago.
And speaking of the Panthers, just before we let you go, we were saying it feels like Florida, obviously, you know, they're doing great as they, you know, sort of momentum from last year. But they've definitely developed a rep. And I know the other day there was something out there about, you know, NHL players saying Nick Cousins was the most punchable player in the NHL. Are the Panthers the anti-heroes of the NHL right now?
I feel like that's not a question for me, because when I see them, I don't see them as any, you don't see that negative. Like, even with the Nick Cousins thing that came out, like, what my co-host of my hockey show in South Florida, Roy Bellamy, and I were, like, looking at each other, because we cover this team every day. Like, is Nick Cousins really that dirty? Like, we...
Yes.
Well, that's it. Everybody, like, hey, I don't know was it just last year when he really pissed everyone off in the playoffs and he scored the goal against Toronto? Or is it, like, deeper rooted? Like, just, I really haven't seen it. And he's such a great guy and everybody loves him. Like, he's one of those guys that you love to have on your team.
Right.
And you hate to play against.
Right.
But I can't wait to, because he's been hurt from what happened in Arizona. I can't wait till he comes back just so I can ask him, like, so do you think you have the most punchable face? Like,
right.
How did you react to that? Because it's something funny, and I'm sure they cracked up about it, but it's good to be the anti-hero, right? Like, I think the Panthers would love to be in that situation, considering where they've come from.
It's definitely, I can see it as a chemistry thing, and you know, nobody wants us to win kind of. Athletes love that.
It's a great identity for a team that, you know, forget about the regular season when you're looking at playoff teams. I don't want to play the Panthers.
Yeah.
I especially don't want to play against Sergei Bobrovsky, and you can see that
right?
Last night. No one wanted to face Bobrovsky in that one-on-one.
No, he looked great. Yeah. He's really taken his game to another level over the past about calendar year or so, and watching him in the playoffs last year and seeing, like, okay, this is peak Bobrovsky, and the fact that he's carried it to this year, I mean, the Panthers will go as far as Bob will take him.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again to David for joining us in the studio. We got more hockey news pregame show coming up after the break. Stay with us.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show, and we are joined now by Curtis Martin, a writer for our women's site. And Curtis, big weekend here in Toronto. We've seen a lot of PWHL participation, including on the Thursday, the 3-on-3. So let's start there with just, you know, that showcase and what it meant to have this new league that's going so well so far show off their stuff.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, talking to the players after the game on Thursday, this meant a lot to them, but I think it means a lot more to the players that weren't able to play in this game. I think talking to Sarah Nurse with the media afterwards, she was talking a lot about how, you know, it's great that they're able to play in this game, but they're thinking about the other 60 players or however many other players are in this league that weren't able to play in the game yesterday and that they were able to represent them. I think that was the biggest point for them, and showing that, you know, the women's game is as entertaining as the men's game, and that they should have an equal share of the market as the NHL.
Were any of you guys surprised that the women didn't participate in the skills competition this year? I know in past years, like I was in the San Jose one when it was Kendall Coyne.
Right.
She like whipped around the ice. And
she beat Clayton Keller in the fastest skater.
Exactly. And I thought for sure we'd see, you know, whether it's accuracy shooting or those obstacles. I think that would have been a perfect showcase, again, to show off the skill.
I think it was like, I agree with you. I think it was a little disappointing. I think there's a couple players I'm sure we'll talk about her later in the segment, but Alex Carpenter has, I think, one of the best shots in the world, let alone in women's hockey. I think we saw that in the first game of the season against Toronto, and she obviously wasn't playing for the skill or showcase yesterday, but I think that, you know, just bringing these players, kind of like a Trevor Zegras did with the All-Star last year, where you have specialty skills for these players that they can come in, show their skill, and that just only grows the audience for this league more.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, too, because I know the NBA All-Star Game's coming up, and there's going to be a three-point shootout or showdown between Sabrina Ionescu and Steph Curry.
Yeah,
and a lot of NBA players and former NBA players are like, she might take it, right?
Yeah.
So if you're talking accuracy and, you know, I mean, the way they did it this year, just timed and everything like that, I mean, it would be cool to see. Would Alex Carpenter beat Auston Matthews or Connor McDavid?
Yeah, even the hardest shot. Like, I don't think anyone's going to beat what Cale Makar did, but I just want to see, like, how hard they can shoot, because I think it opens a lot of people's eyes, the same way that, you know, McDavid might have opened up some non-traditional hockey fans' eyes about just how skilled the players are.
I think even for the, you know, that, to that point, I even think having some of the goalies involved for that shootout,
that would have been good
competition.
Yeah.
I think that's an underrated part of the women's game, is how good the goaltending has been in the game. And I even had, like, when I was talking to Troy a couple weeks ago, he's saying that, you know, I feel like the players are catching up to the goaltending. The goaltending has been a staple of the women's game for so long, and to not see them participate is kind of something that maybe the NHL should look forward to.
Well, and if you think about, you know, some of the women's players that have sort of gone into the men's game a bit, it's always been the goaltenders.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Manon Riom or
Shannon Sabatos played.
Shannon Sabatos, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about the league this year. And, you know, at All-Star Weekend, a lot of questions were being asked to the players, the men's players, just about, you know, what do they like about the game? And two things obviously stand out for me and for the hockey players is, you know, the point system. We got three points for a regulation win. Versus what's going on in the NHL. And the other thing is the jailbreak, where, you know, if you get a penalty and you score a shorthanded goal, player gets out of the penalty box. Can you talk about just about, like, what you've noticed in terms of the women's game and just kind of, you know, what stood out so far?
I think it's sort of the jailbreak. It's interesting. I think defensemen have been more, I don't want to say they haven't been trying for the offense on the power play, but I think they've been more conservative trying to hold the blue line. I think the last thing that these teams want to see is giving up the shorthand goal, but not just giving up the shorthand goal. It's also taking the power play away from them by giving up that shorthand goal. I know we saw, you know, Mantes for Toronto take the puck away on the blue line and lead to the first jailbreak goal in Minnesota in their first game in Minnesota this year. And I think that coaches have really been trying to crack down on, like, the defense on the blue line. And I think, you know, in the NHL, we've seen a lot of teams go with four forwards, one defenseman. I think if this rule is implemented in the NHL, you would see a lot of coaches go back to your two defensemen, three forwards, to help counteract that. But at the same time, I think, you know, coaches will admit the forwards are going to try and score. I don't think this is going to stop them from taking advantage of the odd man opportunity they have, but I just think that it adds a little nice wrinkle to the league.
No, definitely.
And Mike, you were saying with the standings, it's kind of interesting because obviously it's a condensed schedule, but teams are not necessarily out of it if they get off to a bad start because you're getting those three-point wins.
Yeah, I know. Luckily for Toronto fans, who as a franchise have gotten off to a rough start, it's not over for them yet. They have a big game later today against Minnesota. But with the three-point rule and the 3-2-1 standings and point system, every team's really in it. As long as you can keep competitive games, you can take it to overtime, you can maybe consistently winning games, you can always be involved in being in the top of the standings. Obviously, you want to win games in regulation. You want those 3 points. But to have this system, it kind of allows things to be a little bit tighter than they might have been in the NHL point system.
It was interesting. I was talking to a guy from the league, and he was saying that, you know, the thing that stood out for him is, like, we're not talking about, you know, attendance or, you know, is the league going to get off the ground and stuff. He's like, a lot of the chatter has been about, like, hey, what does Toronto need to do to get some points here? Or, like, you know, where fingers are pointing either, like, at the power play or the penalty kill or the goaltending. And I guess that is refreshing. Like, we're actually talking about hockey, not just about, you know, the greater issue of, like, oh, is women's hockey going to survive this time?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, if we want to talk about Toronto, Victoria Bock's going to play her first game today for Toronto, make her debut. Mm-hmm. She just graduated from Brock. I think it was Teachers College, if I'm not mistaken. And she's coming back, joining the team, and they made a roster move yesterday night. So I think talking to Troy about that, that's going to be a big addition to this team, and someone that he was telling to me in the reports yesterday is looking to step up on the power play and help their power play, which has been the worst in the league so far this season.
Right on. So just to sort of wrap up, so far in the PWHL, hoping to get, like, your most pleasant surprise player and then team as well, just based on preseason prognostications.
I think going into game one, everyone thought Boston was going to run away with this league, but I think there's two teams for that answer in terms of teams. I think it's Minnesota for me. I mean, that shouldn't be a shock. Taylor Heisey is one of the best players in the world right now in the women's game. And then going to the other best player in the game right now, Marie-Philippe has really carried Montreal, and those are two teams that I don't want to say they're pleasant surprises, but I think I've done better than I expected in a league where I thought Boston was the had the most depth and was going to run away with things.
Gotcha. Excellent. Well, Curtis, thanks so much for this. And for all PWHL coverage, go to our women's team site on thehockeynews.com.
Ryan, you know what time it is.
It is All-Star Rapid Fire time.
Ooh, All-Star Rapid Fire time. Producer Connor, hit us up with some rapid fire questions.
All right. Well, last show, you did your predictions for the All-Star Skills Competition. Mm-hmm. We kept track.
Nice.
Small addendum. When we did it, we didn't know Jack Hughes was not going to take part.
True.
So instead, your guesses there are Matthew Barzal. Do you want just the scores, or do
give
you
us the scores? Yeah.
All right, scores. So it was close. You both sucked.
I had the winner. I know that.
You did have the winner.
Yeah.
You guys picked Kucherov a couple times, which is a big mistake.
Yeah.
Going forward, never pick Kucherov.
Right.
But on top of the winner, you got the obstacle course right.
Yes.
You got Mr. Connor McDavid.
Yes.
Trekos, you got the fastest skater because you went out on a limb and picked
McDavid.
Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Smart man.
However, that was it.
Well, Jack Hughes wasn't there, so.
There you
Jack Hughes wasn't there, but you replaced him with Matthew Barzal, who, granted, had a very good skills competition.
He did. He gave McDavid a run for his money.
He did. Yeah. But unfortunately, that does mean, Ryan, you won with a grand score of 2. Which is not great.
No, that's
not. Whatever.
Still better than Kucherov.
That's right. I did better than Kucherov. I got 2 points.
Yes, that is very true.
Yeah, and I tried.
You did try.
That's the most important thing.
Let's stick with this All-Star theme, though. We never talked about the draft.
Right.
What did you think about the All-Star draft?
It was okay. You know what was funny was I was talking to Nathan McKinnon in the scrum afterwards, and you know, someone was like, oh, how much prep did you do as captain? And he was like, none. He was like, I didn't even know we were doing it at the rink. He thought it would be at a studio somewhere. And we were talking before the show, you know, in San Jose at the All-Star game, you know, they did a lot of festivities at like a sort of theater concert venue beforehand.
And like a concert hall.
Yeah, it was more intimate. I think they probably, I don't know if a big arena was the right move?
I don't think you need the draft. I don't think it added anything. I would have do away with it. Align them along their divisions, maybe.
Yeah, I don't mind the draft, but I would have liked them to have more cocktails. Because as we've seen in the past, that's when they have the most fun. And they did have the celebrities that were there that kind of helped because, you have people that are obviously, very used to being, in front of cameras, public speaking and whatnot. So that kind of helps. But I think if we've learned anything over this All-Star weekend, it's that personalities are not the NHL's strong suit. Yeah, it's the on-ice that rules the day. And if you're going to have any fun, they have to be half-lit.
Yeah, just get them playing hockey. I don't know. Is that too much?
Yeah. No, I think it's fine.
Yeah, so that's too much to ask for hockey players. You know what? I'm only going to ask one more question.
Okay.
I have to ask it. It's mandatory at this point. Coach gets fired. Who's the next one? Who's on the hot seat?
Yeah, it's been a pretty brutal year for head coaches in the NHL.
We're kind of player-friendly head coaches.
Good point. Yeah, so there's not a lot left that are in danger because I think some of the teams that are underwhelmed is because of injuries. You look at New Jersey, for example. So I think Lindy Ruff is fine. I'm gonna go with the easy answer, and it's Sheldon Keefe in Toronto because the Leafs, they gotta win multiple rounds this year. They certainly have to make the playoffs, which is not a given right now. So it's got to be that hot seat for me.
Yeah, the hot seat in Toronto is kind of like the seat in my truck, Ryan. It's always heated.
Gotcha. Okay,
so it doesn't matter what the record is. Sheldon Keefe is always on a hot seat. But I'm going to throw out another name, Buffalo's Don Granato. I don't think he should get fired.
I agree.
I just think that where the Sabres are right now, they're almost running out of options or ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see him being sort of the fall guy, a la Todd McClellan. I didn't think he was doing a poor job as well. So,
right.
I feel sorry for them, but, that's... That's the breaks.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, he's a good teacher, so hopefully they keep him on because they need some consistency there.
All right, well, this is it for the Hockey News pregame show. Thanks again to NorthlandHockey.com and BetMGM. See you next week at the rink.